He did everything he could, except stay.
I hold her hand.
Maybe he just has a feeling about her,
Gabby says, echoing my sentiments from yesterday morning. Although, I'll tell you, it feels like a decade ago.
Maybe he can just tell.
I don't know what to say to that, so I don't say anything.
I was never sure he was the one. Even when you asked me the other day, I could sort of feel myself sugarcoating what I really thought. I just thought Mark was a smart decision. We'd been together for a long time, and I just figured that's what you do. But I never had the moment when I just knew.
You, she says to me,
have that feeling.
I dismiss her. I've had that feeling before, though. For a long time, I had that feeling about Ethan. Now I have it about Henry. I mean, maybe it doesn't count if you have it for more than one person.
But I never had it about him. He never had it about me. And maybe he has it now. It makes me feel a little better, she says, to think that he left me because he met the one.
Why does that make you feel better? I cannot possibly conceive of how that could make her feel better.
Because if I'm not his soulmate, then that means he's not mine. There's someone else out there for me. If he found his, maybe I'll find my own.
And that makes you feel better. She holds her index finger and thumb together to form the smallest gap.
Ever so slightly, she says. So much it's almost non-existent.
Invisible to the naked eye, I add.
But it's there.
I rub her back some more as she digests all of this.
You know who I thought of yesterday, when you were talking about that feeling? The only one I think I might have felt that with?
Who?
Jesse Flint.
From high school? She nods.
Yeah,
she says.
He ended up marrying that girl Jessica Campos, but I don't know, until then, I always figured we would have something.
They got divorced, I tell her. A few years ago, I think. I saw it on Facebook.
Well, there you go, she says. Just that little piece of information gives me hope that there is somebody out there who makes me feel the way Henry makes you feel.
I smile at her. I can promise you there is someone better out there. I'd write it in stone.
You have to find Henry, she says. Don't you think? How do we do it? How are you going to find Henry?
I tell her about the letter, and then I shrug. I might not find him, I say.
And that's okay.
If you told me a month ago that I was going to get hit by a car and Mark was going to leave you, you'd never have been able to convince me that things would be okay. But I got hit by a car, and Mark left you, and we're still standing. Well, you can stand. I'm sitting. But we're still alive, right? We're still okay.
I mean, things are pretty crappy, Hannah, she says.
But they are okay, aren't they? Aren't we okay? Don't we both still have hope for the future?
Yeah,
she nods somberly.
We do.
So I'm not going to go around worrying too much, I tell her. I'm just going to do my best and live under the assumption that if there are things in this life that we are supposed to do, if there are people in this world we are supposed to love, we'll find them. In time. The future is so incredibly unpredictable that trying to plan for it is like studying for a test you'll never take. I'm okay in this moment. To be with you. Here. In Los Angeles. If we're both quiet, we can hear birds chirping outside. If we take a moment, we can smell the onions from the Mexican place on the corner. This moment, we're okay. So I'm just going to focus on what I want and need right now, and trust that the future will take care of itself.
So what is it then?
Gabby asks. What is what?
What is it that you want out of life right now?
I look at her and smile. A cinnamon roll. 3 weeks later. I am now firmly in my second trimester. I've gained enough weight that I look big, but not enough that it's clear I'm pregnant. I'm just big enough to look like I have a beer belly. I'm sure I'll be complaining when I'm the size of a house, but I'm inclined to think this part is worse, at least for my ego. Some days I feel good. Other days I have a backache and eat 3 sandwiches for lunch. I'm convinced that I have a double chin. Gabby says I don't, but I do. I can see it when I look in the mirror. There's my chin, and then a second chin right there below the first one. Gabby comes to a lot of my doctor's appointments and birthing classes. Not all of them, but most of them. She has also been reading the books with me and talking things through. Will I have a natural birth? Will I use cloth diapers? My instinct tells me no and no. It's nice to have someone in my corner. It makes me more confident that I can do this. And I am finally finding my confidence. Sure, this is all very scary, and sometimes I want to crawl under the blankets and never come out, but I'm a woman who has been desperately looking for purpose and family, and I found both. Never has it been more clear to me that I have family around me in unconventional places, that I have always had more purpose than I have ever known. I no longer feel a rush to leave this city and head for greener pastures, because there are no greener pastures and there is no better city. I am grounded here. I have a support system here. I have someone who needs me to put down roots and pick a place. My parents were disappointed to learn that I wasn't going to join them in London, but the moment they resigned themselves to my decision, they suggested that the two of them and Sarah come out to LA when the baby is born. They are going to come and visit me. Us. I just started working at Carl's office, and it has been both hugely stabilizing and really eye-opening. I see mothers and fathers every day who are in our office because they have a sick kid or a new baby or they are worried about one thing or another. You see how deeply these parents love their children, how much they would do for them, how far they are willing to go to make them happy, to keep them healthy. It's really made me think about what's important to me, what I'd be willing to lose everything for, not just as a friend or as a parent, but also as a person. I'm enjoying it so much that I'm thinking about working in a pediatrician's office long term. Obviously, this is all very new, but I can't remember the last time a job made me this excited. I like working with kids and parents. I like helping people through things that might be scary or new or nerve-wracking. So this morning, while Gabby is taking Charlemagne to the vet, I have found myself Googling nursing schools. I mean, it seems completely absurd to have a job, go to nursing school, and have a child, but I'm not going to let that stop me. I'm looking into it. I'll see if there is any way I can make it work. That's what you do when you want something. You don't look for reasons why it won't work. You look for reasons why it will. So I'm searching. I'm digging for ways to make it happen. I'm looking into the local community college when my phone rings. It's Ethan. I hesitate for a moment. I hesitate for so long that by the time I decide to answer, I've missed the call. I stare at the phone, stunned, until I hear his voice.
"I know you're home," he says, teasing me. "I can see your car on the street."
I whip my head toward the entry, and I can see his forehead and hair through the glass at the top of the door.
"I didn't get to the phone in time," I tell him as I stand up and walk to the door.
There is a part of me that doesn't want to open it. I've been thinking lately that maybe I am meant to raise this baby on my own, to be on my own until my kid is in college and I'm pushing 50. Sometimes, when I'm lying awake at night, I imagine a middle-aged Ethan knocking on my door years in the future. He says he loves me and can't live without me anymore, and I tell him I feel the same way, and we spend the second half of our lives together. I have told myself on more than one occasion that the timing will work out one day. I've told myself this so many times that I've started to believe it. And now, knowing he's on the other side of the door, it feels wrong. This wasn't a part of my new plan.
"Will you open the door?" he asks. "Or do you hate me that much?"
"I don't hate you," I say. "I don't hate you at all."
My hand is on the knob, but my wrist doesn't turn.
"But you're not going to open the door?"
It's polite to open the door. It's what you do. No, I say. And then I realize the real reason I don't want to open it, and I figure the best thing to do is to tell him. I'm not ready to see you, I say. To look at you. He's quiet for a moment. Quiet so long that I think he might have left. And then he speaks.
How about just talking to me? Is that okay? Talking?
Yeah, I say. That's okay.
Well then, get comfortable, he says. This may take a minute.
I see his hair disappear from view, and I realize he's sitting down on the front stoop. Okay, I say. I'm listening. He's quiet again, but this time I know he hasn't left.
I broke up with you, he says.
Well, I don't know about that, I tell him. I didn't leave you much choice. I'm having a baby.
No, he says. In high school.
I smile and shake my head, but then I realize he can't see me, so I give him the verbal cue he's looking for. No shit, Sherlock.
I think I wanted to pin it on you, because I didn't want to admit that I might have avoided this whole thing if I'd acted differently back then.
Avoided what? Me being pregnant? I don't want to avoid being pregnant. I like where life has led me, and if he can't handle it, that is not my problem.
No,
he says.
Being without you for so many years.
Oh, I say.
I love you, he says. I'm pretty sure I loved you from the moment I met you at homecoming and you told me you listened to Weezer.
I laugh and work my way down to sit on the floor.
And I broke up with you because I thought I was going to marry you.
What do you mean?
I was 19 and a freshman in college and I thought, I have already met the girl I'm going to marry. And it scared me, you know. I remember thinking that I'd never sleep with anyone else. I'd never kiss another girl. I'd never do any of the things my friends at school were doing, things I wanted to do. Because I'd already met you. I'd already met the girl of my dreams. And you know, for one stupid moment in college, I thought that was a bad thing. So I let you go. And if I'm being completely honest, even though it makes me sound like a total jerk, I always thought I'd get you back. I thought I could break up with you and have my fun and be young, and then, when I was done, I'd go get you back. It never occurred to me that you have to hold those things sacred.
I didn't know that, I tell him.
I know, because I never told you. And then, of course, I realized that I didn't want any of those stupid college things. I wanted you. But when I came home for Christmas to tell you, you were already dating someone else. I should have blamed myself, but I blamed you. And I should have fought for you, but I didn't. I felt rejected, and I turned to someone else.
I'm sorry, I say.
No, he says. You shouldn't be sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I keep chickening out. I see what I want, and I'm too scared to do what it takes to have it. I'm too much of an idiot to sacrifice the small stuff in order to have the big stuff. I love you, Hannah, more than I have ever loved anyone else. And I told you when I got you back that I would never again let anything get in the way.
I nod to myself, even though I know he can't see me.
And what do? At the first sign of trouble, I back out.
It's not that simple, Ethan. We started dating again, and within 2 weeks I told you I was having another man's baby. These are extenuating circumstances.
I don't know,
he says.
I'm not sure I believe in extenuating circumstances, not when it comes to this.
You said it yourself, I tell him. Sometimes the timing just doesn't work out.
I'm not sure I believe in that anymore either, he says. Timing seems like an excuse. Extenuating circumstances is an excuse. If you love someone, if you think you could make them happy for the rest of your life together, then nothing should stop you. You should be prepared to take them as they are and deal with the consequences. Relationships aren't neat and clean. They're ugly and messy, and they make almost no sense except to the two people in them. That's what I think. I think if you truly love someone, you accept the circumstances. You don't hide behind them.
What do you mean?
I mean I love you, and I want to be with you. And if you want to be with me, then nothing is going to stop me. Not timing, not babies, nothing. If you want to do this, if you want to be with me, I will take you in whatever form I can have you. I will love you just as you are. I won't try to change a single thing about you.
Ethan, you don't know what you're saying.
I do,
he says. With my back against the door, I can feel that he has stood up. I stand up with him.
Hannah, I believe you are the love of my life, and I'd rather live a life with 40 babies that aren't mine than be without you. I have missed you every day since I last saw you. I've missed you for years. I'm not saying this is an ideal situation, but I'm saying that it's one I'm on board for, if you'll have me.
What happens when my baby is born? I ask him.
I don't know,
he says.
I know I said that I wasn't ready to be a father, but I keep thinking to myself, what if it was my baby? Would I behave differently? And I would. If you were pregnant by me, accident or not, I'd get ready.
And now? I ask him through the door. When it's not your kid?
I'm not sure I see much of a difference anymore,
he says.
What you love, I love.
I stare down at the floor. My hands are shaking.
We can figure out how you want to play it,
he says.
I could be a dad or a stepdad or a friend or an uncle. I can help with all the classes and be there when you give birth if you'll let me. Or I can hang back if that's what you want. I'll follow your lead. I'll be the person you need me to be. Just let me be a part of this, Hannah. Let me be with you.
I put my hands on the door to steady them. I feel as if I might fall down. I don't know what to say, I tell him.
Say how you feel,
he says. I feel confused, I say. And surprised?
Sure,
he says. And I feel like maybe we can do this.
You do?
Yeah, I say. I feel like maybe this was how it was supposed to go all along.
Yeah?
He says. I can feel the joy in his voice as it vibrates through the door. Yeah, I say. Maybe I was meant to have this baby, and I was meant to be with you, and everything is happening the way it's supposed to. What I believe to be fated seems to fall perfectly in line with what I want to be true at any given moment. But I think that's okay. I think that's hope. It's messy, I tell him. You said earlier that it's messy, and you're right. It's messy.
Messy is okay,
he says.
Right? We can do messy.
Yeah, I say, tears now falling down my face. We can do messy.
Open the door, sweetheart, please,
he says.
I love you.
I love you too, I say. But I don't open the door.
Hannah?
Ethan says. I'm fat now, I tell him.
That's okay.
No, really, I'm growing a double chin.
I have back acne, he says. Nobody's perfect.
I laugh through my tears. Are you sure you can be with a fat lady?
What did I tell you?
He says.
I told you that you could gain 400 pounds and I'd want to be with you.
And you meant it?
I meant it.
I open the door to see Ethan standing on the stoop. He is wearing a light blue t-shirt and dark jeans. His eyes are glassy and his mouth is smiling wide. He has a box of cinnamon rolls in his hand.
You're the most gorgeous woman I've ever seen,
he says. And then he steps into the house, and he kisses me. And for the first time in my life, I know I have done everything right. 3 months later. I can walk now, without a walker, on my own. I use a cane sometimes when I'm tired or sore, but it never holds me back. Sometimes I walk to the convenience store down the street to get a candy bar, but not because I want the candy bar, but because I appreciate the walk to get one. Gabby's still not ready to date, still skittish from the shock of it all, but she's moving on. She's happy. She got us a dog, a St. Bernard, just like Carl and Tina have. She named him Tucker. The woman who hit me proved also to be responsible for another hit-and-run 2 years ago. She didn't hit a person then, but she did hit a car and drive off. Between insurance payouts and the lawsuit, I'll have enough money to be comfortable on my feet. When I got to the point where I could get myself from place to place, I bought a car. It's a cherry red hatchback. You can see me coming from miles away, which I like. I think it's a very me car. Then, once I had a car, I started looking for a job. I told Carl and Tina that I've been thinking about going to nursing school. After the money comes in, I'll be able to afford it, and I keep thinking about the nurses who helped me during my hospital stay. In particular, I think of Nurse Hannah and how well she handled me at my most annoying, and I think of Deanna and that pediatric nurse who helped those parents on the oncology floor. And of course, I think of Henry. Nurses help people, and I'm starting to think there's nothing more important I can do with my time than that. When you almost lose your life, it makes you want to double down, to do something important and bigger than yourself. And I think this is my thing. Carl offered me a job at his pediatric office until I figure out what I want to do. He says that his practice has a program to help staff members go to night school if they meet certain financial criteria. When I remind him that I probably won't meet those criteria, he laughed at me and said,
"Good point. Just come take the job for the experience and living wage, then. Spend your money on school."
So I took him up on it. It's early still. I've only been working there a few weeks, but it's confirming what I already know. I'm headed in the right direction. I told my parents that I wasn't moving to London, and they were sad, but seemed to take it well.
"Okay," my mom said. "We get it. But in that case, we need to talk about a good time for us to visit."
And then my dad pulled the phone away from her and said he was coming in July, whether I liked it or not.
"I don't want to wait until Christmas to see you again. And to be honest, I'm starting to miss 4th of July barbecues."
A few weeks later, my mom called to say they were considering buying a condo in Los Angeles.
"You know, just a place where we could stay when we come to visit from now on," she said. "That is, if you're staying in Los Angeles."
I told her I was. I said I wasn't going anywhere. I said I was here to stay. I didn't even think twice about it. I just said it. Because it was true. Ethan has started dating a really nice woman named Ella. She's a high school teacher and a pretty intense cyclist. He bought a bike last month, and now they are on some 3-day trek raising money for cancer research. He seems incredibly happy. The other day, he told me that he can't believe he's gone so many years living in Los Angeles without seeing it from a bike. He has bike shorts now. Hilariously tight little bike shorts that he wears with a bike shirt and a helmet. We had dinner the other night, and he biked there from his place, a 30-minute drive away. The smile on his face when he walked in the door rivaled the sun. And he's been great to me. He texts me whenever he sees a place with a cinnamon roll that I haven't tried. When I could walk upstairs on my own, he came over and helped Gabby and me move my stuff back up to the second floor. Even he and Gabby have become close in their own right. The point is, Ethan is a great friend, and I'm glad I didn't ruin it by thinking we had anything left between us. We are better this way. I'd be lying if I said I never think about the child I might have if I hadn't been hit. Occasionally, I'll be doing something completely arbitrary, like taking a shower or driving home, and I'll think about it, the baby. The only way I can make any peace with it is to know that I wasn't ready to be a mother then. But one day, I will be. And I try not to busy my mind with too many thoughts about the past or what could have been. I wake up most mornings feeling refreshed and well-rested, with an excitement about the day. And as long as you can say that, I think you're doing okay. I woke up early this morning, so I figured I'd get into the car and head to Primo's. It's a habit I've started for myself, a small treat when I find the time. I often call my dad while I'm there. It's not the same as when he would take me as a child, but it's close. And I'm finding that, at least with my parents, the more we talk on the phone, the better I feel. I call him now as I'm driving, but he doesn't pick up. I leave a message. I tell him I'm on my way to Primo's and I'm thinking of him. I pull into the crowded Primo's parking lot and park the car. I grab my cane from the back seat and walk around to the front of the store. I stand in line and order a cinnamon roll and a buttermilk donut for Gabby. I pay, and I'm handed an already greasy bag. And then I hear a familiar voice speak to the cashier.
"A cinnamon roll, please."
I turn and look. For a moment, I don't recognize him. He's wearing jeans and a t-shirt. I've only seen him in navy blue scrubs. I look down at his arm to make sure I'm not crazy, to confirm that I'm not seeing things. Isabella. "Henry?" I say. But of course it's him, and I'm surprised just how familiar he looks, how natural it seems that he would be standing in front of me. "Henry." "Hello," I say to him. "Hello, hello, hi."
"Hi," he says, smiling. "I thought I might see you here one of these days."
The man behind the counter gives Henry his cinnamon roll, and Henry hands over some cash. "All the cinnamon roll joints in all the world, and you had to walk into mine," I say. He laughs.
"By design, actually,"
he says. "What do you mean?"
"I figured if I was ever going to meet you again, run into you, and start a conversation like two normal people, I knew my best bet was a place with good cinnamon rolls."
I blush. I know I'm blushing because I can feel the warmth on my cheeks.
"Can we talk outside?"
he says. The two of us are holding up the line. I nod and follow him out. He sits down at one of the metal tables. I put down my food. Both of us pull out our cinnamon rolls. Henry takes a bite of his first.
"Did you get my letter?"
he asks me when he's done chewing. I chew, closing my eyes and nodding. "Yeah," I say finally. "I looked for you for a while, on street corners and in stores. I kept looking at men's arms."
"For the tattoo?"
he asks. "Yeah," I say.
"And you never found me?"
"Until today," I say. He smiles. "I'm sorry if I caused any problems for you at work," I say. He waves me off.
"You didn't. Hannah didn't love the stunt you pulled after I left, though,"
he says, laughing.
"But she also said you seemed like a stalker, and that I was clearly not to blame."
I blush so hard I have to put my head in my hands. "Oh, I'm so embarrassed," I say. "I was on a lot of medication." He laughs.
"Don't be embarrassed," he says. "It made my day when I found out about it."
"It did?" I ask him.
"Are you kidding me? Prettiest girl you've ever seen rolls herself through a hospital, desperately trying to find you? Made my week."
"Well," I say, "I wanted to say a proper goodbye, I guess. I felt like we..." Henry shakes his head.
"You don't need to explain anything to me. Are you free tonight for dinner? I want to take you on a date."
"You do?" I say.
"Yes,"
Henry says.
"What do you say?"
I laugh. I say, "Yeah, that sounds lovely. Oh, but I can't tonight. I have plans with Gabby. But tomorrow? Could you do tomorrow?"
"Yep,"
he says.
"I can do whenever you can do. What about now? What are you doing now?"
"Now?"
"Yeah."
"Nothing."
"Will you go for a walk with me?"
"I would love that," I tell him. I wipe the sugar off my hands and grab my cane. "I hope you don't mind that I have to use a cane."
"Are you kidding me?"
he says.
"I've been going to bakeries for months hoping to find you. Something as small as a cane isn't going to put me off."
I smile. "Plus, if I didn't need this cane, I probably would never have met you. Although, who knows, maybe we could have met another way."
As a man who has been trying to run into you for months, let me assure you how rare it is that two specific people's paths will cross.
He takes my hand in his, and I have waited for it for so long, have believed so strongly that it may never happen, that it proves as intimate a gesture as any I have ever experienced. To car accidents, then, I say. He laughs.
To car accidents. And to everything that has led up to this.
He kisses me then, and I realize I was wrong about the hand-holding. It now feels teenagerish and quaint. This is what I'd been waiting for. And as I stand there, in the middle of the city, kissing my night nurse, I know for the first time in my life that I have done everything right. After all, he tastes like a cinnamon roll, and I've never kissed anyone who tasted like a cinnamon roll. 3 years later. Gabby hates surprises, but Carl and Tina insisted that it had to be a surprise party. I told them I would go along with their plan, and then I spilled the beans to Gabby last week so she'd know what to expect. I just knew that if it were me, I'd want the heads up. So here we are, at her 32nd birthday, me, Ethan, and 50 of her closest friends huddled in her parents' living room, completely in the dark, waiting to surprise someone who won't be surprised. We hear her parents' car pull into the driveway. I give one last warning to everyone to be quiet when I see their headlights go out. We hear them walk up to the door. We see the door open. I turn on the lights, and the entire room of us yells, "Surprise!" just as we are supposed to. Gabby's eyes go wide. She's a good faker. She looks genuinely terrified. And then she turns immediately into Jesse's chest. He laughs, holding her.
"Happy birthday,"
he says, and then he spins her back around to look at all of us. Tina decorated the room tastefully. Champagne and a dessert bar, white and silver balloons. Gabby makes her way to me first.
"Thank God you told me," she whispers. "I don't know if I could have handled all of this without a warning."
I laugh. "Happy birthday," I tell her. "Surprise!" We laugh.
"Where's Gabriella?"
"I left her with Paula," I say. Paula is our go-to babysitter, maybe more of a nanny. She's an older woman I worked with in Carl's office. She retired and then found herself really bored, so she looks after Gabriella during the day when I am at work, or any time Gabby, Ethan, and I aren't around. Gabriella loves her. Ethan and I have always jokingly called Gabby the third parent, so it was only natural that we started calling Paula the fourth. For a woman who felt as if her parents weren't around, I've certainly given my kid a plethora of them.
"Did you tell Paula yet?"
Gabby asks in a clandestine whisper.
"About the thing?"
I can only assume that she's referring to the fact that Ethan and I have, just this month, started trying to have a second child.
"No," I whisper. "You're still the only one who knows."
"Seems better just to let everyone know once we've succeeded," Ethan says. "But Hannah has forgotten to tell you the best part about tonight."
"I have."
"Paula said she'd spend the night, so it's party time as far as I'm concerned,"
Ethan says, standing beside me.
"And happy birthday. That too."
He hands Gabby a bottle of wine that we picked up for her.
"Thank you,"
she says. She gives him a big hug.
"I love you guys. Thank you so much for all of this."
"We love you too," I say. "Have you seen the Flints? They're in the back." I point, but she's already moving toward them. I watch her as she hugs her soon-to-be in-laws. You can tell they love her.
"Nice try, kiddo,"
Carl says, coming up to me.
"You two almost fooled me."
I act mock confused. "I have no idea what you're talking about."
"She knew. I know my daughter, and she knew. And I know Jesse didn't tell her, because he's still too scared of me. You're the only one brave enough to defy me."
I laugh. "She hates surprises," I say in my own defense. Carl shakes his head and then looks at Ethan.
"Is this what serves as an apology with your wife?"
Ethan laughs and puts his hands up in surrender.
I'm staying out of it.
I'm sorry, I say to Carl sincerely. He waves me off.
I'm teasing. As long as she's happy, I don't care. And it appears she is.
Tina fights her way through the crowd to talk to us. She gives me a big hug and then goes straight for the kill. When are you leaving the office to start school full-time? Next month, I say. But I'm still not sure about this. I look to Carl. So far, I have put myself through school by working just under full-time for him and taking advantage of his practice's tuition reimbursement program. It's been an amazing opportunity, but with Gabriella and the possibility of a second child, I want to finish my certification faster. Ethan and I discussed it, and I'm leaving my job to go to school full-time. But if Carl wants me to stay longer, I'll stay longer. I'd do anything for him. Without him, without the Hudsons in general, I don't know where I'd be.
Would you stop? Get your certification. And when you're done, at least give me the first option to hire you. That's all I can ask.
But you two have done so much for me. I don't know how I could ever repay you.
You don't repay us, Tina says. We're your family.
I smile and put my head on Carl's shoulder.
I do need a favor of you tonight, though,
Carl says,
if you'll oblige me.
Of course, I say.
Yates has been on me to hire someone from his old office, a nurse, I guess, who's here with him. I swear, Yates is like a dog with a bone. He just will not let up when he wants something.
Dr. Yates is a new doctor at the practice. Carl and Dr. Yates don't see eye to eye on a lot of stuff, but he's a good guy. I invited him to the party, even though Carl thought it wasn't necessary. But Carl also wanted to invite the entire office except Yates, so I think I was right about this.
And you know me,
Carl continues.
I'm not good talking business at a party. Or rather, I hate talking business at a party.
Carl is perfectly fine talking business anywhere. He just doesn't want to talk to Yates. I'll do a quick screening for you if I run into them, I say.
I'm going to go check on Gabriella,
Ethan says. He steps into the kitchen, and I watch as he calls Paula. He always does this. He talks a big game about leaving her for a night, and then he calls every 2 hours. He has to know how she is, what she's eaten. For someone who didn't know if he was ready to be a parent, he is the most conscientious parent I've ever seen. He officially adopted Gabriella last year. Ethan wanted us all to have the same name.
We're a family,
he says.
A team.
She is now Gabriella Martin Hanover. We are the Martin Hanovers. And sure, maybe Gabriella and Ethan aren't related by blood, but you'd never know it to look at them, to hear them talk to each other. They are family as much as any two people can be. The other day at the grocery store, the cashier said Gabriella and Ethan had the same eyes. He smiled and said thank you.
I know, sweetheart, but Daddy needs to talk to Paula.
I can hear him saying into the phone.
If you go to bed when Paula asks you to, Mama and I will come in and give you a kiss when we get home, okay?
Gabriella must have given the phone back to Paula, because the next thing I hear out of Ethan's mouth is,
okay, but you got the marble out of her nose?
We are tired a lot of the time. We don't go on dates as often as we'd like, but we love each other madly. I'm married to a man who became a father because he loved me, and now loves me because I made him a father. And he makes me laugh, and he looks handsome when he dresses up, which he has done tonight. He comes back into the room, and soon the place is so loud we can barely hear each other speak. Just when the party seems to hit its peak, someone asks Jesse to tell the story of how he and Gabby met. Slowly but surely, the entire house quiets down to listen. Jesse stands at the base of the fireplace so he can be seen and heard by everyone. He's too short to be seen on his own.
First day of geometry class, 10th grade. I looked to the front of the classroom and saw the most interesting girl I'd ever laid eyes on.
Jesse has told this story so many times, I could tell it myself at this point.
And, to my delight, she was shorter than me.
Everyone laughs.
But I didn't ask her out. I was too nervous. 3 weeks into school, another girl asked me out, and I said yes because I was 15 and was going to take it wherever I could get it.
The crowd laughs again.
Jessica and I dated for a long time, and then broke up senior year. And of course, when we broke up, I immediately found Gabby and asked her out. And we had this great date. And then, the next morning, my girlfriend called me, and she wanted to get back together. And we did. Jessica and I spent college together, got married after, yada yada yada.
He always says yada yada yada.
Jessica and I split up after 2 years of marriage. It just wasn't working. And then, a few years later, I get a Facebook request from Gabby Hudson. The Gabby Hudson.
That's my favorite part. The part where he calls her the Gabby Hudson.
And I got really nervous and excited, and I started Facebook stalking her, and wondering if she was single, and if she would ever date me. And the next thing I know, we're out to dinner at some hip restaurant in Hollywood, and I just had this feeling. I didn't tell her then, because I didn't want to be creepy, but I felt like I finally understood why people get married a second time. When I got divorced, I wasn't sure if I'd ever be up for it again, but then it all clicked into place. And I understood that my marriage failed the first time because I picked the wrong person. And finally, the right person was standing in front of me. So I waited the appropriate amount of months of dating, and I told her how I felt. And then I asked her to marry me, and she said yes.
That's usually the end of his story, but he keeps talking.
I was reading a book about the cosmos recently,
he says. And then he looks around and goes,
hold on, trust me, this relates.
The crowd laughs again.
And I was reading about different theories about the universe. I was really taken with this one theory that states that everything that is possible happens. That means that when you flip a quarter, it doesn't come down heads or tails. It comes up heads and tails. Every time you flip a coin and it comes up heads, you are merely in the universe where the coin came up heads. There is another version of you out there, created the second the quarter flipped, who saw it come up tails. This is happening every second of every day. The world is splitting further and further into an infinite number of parallel universes where everything that could happen is happening. This is completely plausible, by the way. It's a legitimate interpretation of quantum mechanics. It's entirely possible that every time we make a decision, there is a version of us out there somewhere who made a different choice. An infinite number of versions of ourselves are living out the consequences of every single possibility in our lives. What I'm getting at here is that I know there may be universes out there where I made different choices that led me somewhere else, led me to someone else.
He looks at Gabby.
And my heart breaks for every single version of me that didn't end up with you.
I'm embarrassed to say that I start crying. Gabby catches my eye, and I can see she's teary too. Everyone is staring in rapt attention. Jesse is done speaking, but no one can turn away. I know that I should do something, but I'm not sure what to do.
Way to make the rest of us look bad,
a guy shouts from the back of the room. The crowd laughs and disperses. I turn and look behind me, trying to find the man who spoke, but I don't see him. Instead, I see Dr. Yates. I turn to Ethan. Dr. Yates is back there, I say. I'm going to go say hi. I'll be back in a second. He nods and walks over to the desserts.
I'll get you some cheesecake,
he says.
Unless I see a cinnamon roll.
I head over to Dr. Yates.
Hannah?
He says,
quite a party.
I laugh. So it is.
Listen, I want to introduce you to someone.
He gestures to the man standing next to him. The man has a large tattoo on his forearm. I can't quite make out what it is. I think it's some sort of cursive script.
This is Henry. I'm trying to persuade him to leave Angelus Presbyterian and come work with us.
Well, it's a great place to work, I say.
And Henry is one of the best nurses I've ever worked with.
Dr. Yates says. Quite a recommendation, I say to Henry.
Well, I paid good money for him to say that,
he says. I laugh.
Would you two excuse me, Dr. Yates says. I want to say hello to Gabby.
He walks off, and I am left with Henry, unsure what to say. Did you see the dessert bar? I ask.
Yeah,
he says.
I was going to grab something, but honestly, I like breakfast sweets much better. Cheese danishes, for instance, or cinnamon rolls.
I am obsessed with cinnamon rolls, I say.
Rightfully so, he says. They are delicious. I take a cinnamon roll over a brownie any day.
I laugh. It is like you are stealing the words right out of my mouth. He laughs, too.
Are you from around here?
Yeah, I say. I am. You? He shakes his head.
No, I moved out from Texas about 8 years ago.
Oh, where about in Texas? I ask.
Just outside of Austin.
I smile. I lived in Austin for a little while, I say. Great area.
Yeah, he says. Hot as hell, though.
Yes, I say. Amen to that.
So are you a nurse, too?
He asks me. Trying to be, I say. I'm about to leave the practice to go to school full-time. I'm eager to be done with school and start working.
I remember when I officially became an RN.
He laughs to himself.
Seems like ages ago.
Well, I'm a little bit behind, I say.
Oh, no, he says. That's not what I meant at all. I just meant I feel like eons have passed since I started.
Did you always want to work in healthcare? I ask him. Since we're on the subject, no sense in wasting the opportunity to find out more about him and see if he's right for the office. He nods.
Yeah, more or less. My sister died when I was young.
I'm so sorry, I say. He waves me off.
Not necessary, but thank you. I just remember being in the hospital as a kid and seeing how much the nurses were doing to take care of her, to make her comfortable, to make all of us comfortable. And I don't know. I guess I just always wanted to do that.
And there's no way I would ever say no to this guy with a story like that. For me, it was when I was pregnant with my daughter, and I had just started working in the office, I say. I could see how scared some of the parents were sometimes and how much they needed someone who understood what they were going through, and I just really wanted to be that person. And then once I had my daughter, I felt that fear. I felt how much you ache at the thought of anything happening to them. I just wanted to help soothe the anxiety, you know? He smiles. It's a nice smile. There's something very calming about it.
Yeah, I hear you,
he says. If Jesse is right, and there are other universes out there, I've probably met Henry before in one of them. We might work together somewhere. Or we would have met in Texas years ago, maybe in line for a cinnamon roll. Well, I'm sure I'll be seeing you, I say, some way or another.
Yeah,
he says.
Or maybe in another life.
I laugh and excuse myself as Ethan comes and finds me. He brings me a bite-sized cheesecake.
What do you say we leave early?
He says. Early, I say. I thought we were partying all night. Paula will sleep at our place.
Yeah,
he says.
But what if we left the party and went to a hotel?
My eyebrows go up. Are you suggesting what I think you're suggesting?
Let's make a baby, baby.
I put down my glass of water and pop the cheesecake into my mouth. I scoot over to the corner of the room where I see Carl, Tina, Gabby, and Jesse talking. Carl, he seems great. Henry, I mean. You should hire him, for sure. Gabby, I love you. Happy birthday. If you'll excuse Ethan and me, we have to go home. Gabby and Tina give me a hug. Ethan shakes hands with Carl and Jesse. Ethan and I walk out the front door. It started to rain sometime during the evening. I'm chilly, and Ethan takes off his jacket and puts it around my shoulders.
We could stay up all night, you know,
he says, teasing me.
Or we could have sex once, turn on the TV, and fall asleep peacefully.
I laugh. That last one sounds great, I say.
I get into the car, and I am overwhelmed by gratitude. If there are an infinite number of universes, I don't know how I got so lucky as to end up in this one. Maybe there are other lives for me out there, but I can't imagine being as happy in any of them as I am right now, today. I have to think that while I may exist in other universes, none is as good as this. Gabby hates surprises, but I couldn't persuade Carl and Tina to go about this any other way, and I wasn't going to be the one who told her. So here we are, at her 32nd birthday, me, Henry, and 50 of her closest friends, huddled in her parents' living room, completely in the dark. We hear her parents' car pull into the driveway. I give one last warning to everyone to be quiet when I see their headlights go out. I hear them walk up to the door. I see the door open. I turn on the lights, and the entire room of us yells, "Surprise!" just as we are supposed to. Gabby's eyes go wide. She's genuinely terrified for a moment, and then she turns immediately into Jesse's chest. He laughs, holding her.
"Happy birthday,"
he says, and then he spins her back around to look at all of us. The living room is full of beautiful decorations. Champagne flutes and Moet, a dessert bar. Henry and I went all over Los Angeles today to find linen tablecloths to match the decor. Henry loves Gabby, would do anything for her. Gabby makes her way to me first. "Are you mad?" I ask as she hugs me. "I toyed with the idea of telling you." She pulls away from me. You can tell from her face that she's still startled.
"No," she says, "I'm not mad. Overwhelmed, maybe. I'm sort of shocked that between you and Jesse, no one let it slip."
"We made a pact," I tell her, "not to say anything. It was really important to your parents."
"They did all this?"
she says. I nod. "All their idea."
"Happy birthday,"
Henry says. He hands her a glass of champagne. She takes it and gives him a hug.
"And I suppose you won't be having any?"
Gabby says, looking at my belly. I'm 7 months pregnant. It's a girl. We're naming her Isabella after Henry's sister. Gabby doesn't know that we talked about naming her Isabella Gabrielle after her.
"Nope," I say, "but I'll be drinking with you in spirit. Have you seen the Flints?"
I ask her. "They are..." I look around until I find them in the back, waving at her and talking to Jesse. She's already moving toward them. I watch her as she hugs her soon-to-be in-laws. They love her. That much is clear.
"Well done, kiddo,"
Carl says to me.
"I wasn't sure you'd be able to pull it off."
"I'm not great with keeping secrets," I tell him, "but I figured this was an important one. So, ta-da!" I lift my hands up in the air as if I've performed a magic trick. Carl looks at my hands and then at Henry.
"You let your wife attend parties without a wedding ring, son?"
Henry laughs.
"You can get into that with her," he says. "I don't tell her what to do."
"I had to take it off," I tell Carl, defending myself. "My fingers are the size of sausages." Carl shakes his head, teasing me.
"Not even married a year, and already she's coming up with reasons to take off the ring. Tisk tisk."
"You're right. I'm liable to run off at any minute," I say, pointing down to my belly. Carl laughs, and Tina fights her way through the crowd to talk to us. "Look at you, about to be a mother and a nurse," she says, by way of hello. I will finish my nursing degree in a year or so, but that seems like a lifetime from now. All I can think about these days is the baby I'm about to have. "I'm starting to get nervous about juggling it all when the baby comes," I tell her. "I mean, I know I can do it. Plenty of women do it. I think I'm just anxious about everything changing."
"You're gonna be great," Tina says, smiling at me.
"How many times do I have to ask you to come back and work for me once you're done with school?"
Carl says. "I don't want you to feel like you have to offer me a nursing spot," I say. "I want to earn it on my own."
"I'd give you the shirt off my back if you needed it," Carl says. "But that's not why I'm offering you a job.
It isn't?
No. I think you're going to be a great nurse, and I want you at my office.
Plus, this little baby girl is the closest thing we've got to a grandchild, Tina says. I'd like to keep you as close by as possible.
Everybody wants access to the kid,
Henry says.
When you two have been married as long as we have,
Carl tells him,
and your children are grown, and you're bored as hell, you're gonna want access to grandkids, too. Trust me. Do you know how much television I watch? It's shameful. I need a distraction.
Gabby and Jesse come back and join us.
What are we talking about?
Gabby asks. Grandchildren, Tina says, looking at Gabby and Jesse with intent.
Oh, no,
Jesse jokes.
Gabby, turn away slowly and maybe they won't see us.
Gabby mimes trying to leave, but Tina pulls her and Jesse back. Hannah and Henry seem to have found a way to have a baby, Tina says, and I'm not getting any younger. It wouldn't kill you to try.
Tina,
Jesse says,
I promise you, the minute your daughter and I are happily wed, it will be the first thing on my to-do list.
Ethan and Ella join us. They must have just come through the door.
Sorry we're late, Ella says. I was stuck at work, and you know how it is. Happy birthday, she says to Gabby.
She hugs her and then turns to Ethan, who hugs Gabby and smiles. He shakes Henry's hand, gives Jesse a pat on the back, and then hugs me.
We did bring a present,
Ethan says,
to make up for it.
It's a box of Godiva chocolates. The moment I see them, I want to shove them all into my mouth. I figure I can take them from Gabby later if I really want them, or get some of my own. I know that if I say I want them, Henry will stop on the way home. He always gets me any food I want at any time of night. He says that's his job. He says it's the least he can do.
You carry the baby, I'll get the food.
His morning breath is terrible, and he's cheap as hell, but I feel like the luckiest woman in the entire world. The party goes on, all of us hopping from person to person, talking and sharing stories about Gabby. Just when the party seems to hit its peak, someone asks Jesse to tell the story of how he and Gabby met. Slowly but surely, everyone quiets down to listen in. Jesse stands at the base of the fireplace so he can be seen and heard by everyone. I asked him his height once. He's 5'6".
First day of geometry class, 10th grade. I look to the front of the classroom and see the prettiest girl I've ever laid eyes on.
Jesse has told this story about 9,000 times, and each time starts the same.
Although Gabby would say that's not the first thing that I should have noticed about her.
He looks over at her, and she smiles.
But you'd have to notice it about her. She was gorgeous. And, to my delight, she was also short, so I figured I had a shot.
The whole crowd laughs.
But I didn't ask her out, because I was a chicken. 3 weeks into school, another girl asked me out, and I said yes, because when you're 15 and a girl asks you out, you say yes.
The crowd laughs again.
Jessica and I dated all through high school, and we broke up senior year. So what do? I go right out and find Gabby and ask her out. And we have this great date. And then the next morning, my ex-girlfriend calls me, and she wants to get back together. And, long story short, I married Jessica. Anyway, eventually Jessica and I split up. We had to split up. We weren't right for each other. And once I could see that, there was no turning back. So we divorced. And then, a few years later, I get a Facebook request from Gabby Hudson. The Gabby Hudson!
That's my favorite part, the part where he calls her the Gabby Hudson.
And I get way ahead of myself, and I start Facebook stalking her, and wondering if she's single, and if she'd ever date me, and yada yada yada. The next thing I know, we're at lunch on the beach in Santa Monica. She refused to let me pay, and said going Dutch was the most appropriate thing to do. And we started walking back to my car. And I didn't tell her this then, because I knew it would freak her out, but I felt like I finally understood why people get married again. You get your heart broken, you fail at marriage, you're not sure you'll ever be up for it a second time. And then it all clicks into place, and you see that you failed the first time because you picked the wrong person. And now the